Everyone seems to be in good form. There's a smile on the face. There's plenty of summer dresses, summer shirts, summer slacks being worn. But are you as happy as you look? Maybe not if you're a social worker on your way to your next call. Social workers in Northern Ireland are being assaulted, threatened with death, rape and torture. And indeed, pregnant staff have even been told their babies will be killed. What sort of people are they interacting with? Half have experienced violence, 86% have experienced intimidation. Now, these are the findings of an extensive report into how social workers are actually treated here. I want to speak to Carolyn Ewart, who is the Northern Ireland manager with the Northern Ireland Association of Social Workers. Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Carolyn, that is stark, with a capital S, that so many social workers are being threatened to that extent. Now, I do want to put it in some form of context. How many social workers do we have in Northern Ireland?
We have about 5,500 registered social workers at the moment, Frank, in Northern Ireland. And our survey, we have just 220 respondents. So it's a small proportion in terms of the overall number.
Yeah, this...
And we are no... Sorry, go on ahead, Frank.
Yeah, this is why I did want to get that clear, because 220 fill in the form and take part in the feedback, whereas, you know, 5,250 don't take part in your survey. Is there a suggestion maybe that the 5,250 are fine with their terms and conditions and the experiences they're having at work, but the 220 who actually have been through incredible trauma, they've used this very important platform to explain what they've been through?
I mean, I think we in no way, Frank, claim that this survey is entirely representative of the whole social work population. We're aware of the limitation of its size. However, it is fairly reflective when we look at kind of the breakdown in terms of percentages and where people are working. It is fairly reflective of the social work population in Northern Ireland. I mean, you recall, Frank, you had me on the radio at the time when we launched this report, and we did actually make a call at that stage for people who had not experienced any form of intimidation, threats or violence to take part. So we were very keen to try and include positive scenarios as well as negative ones. And I think it's fair to say, I mean, I would want to give a very clear message, Frank, today. We in no way are saying that every social work service user is intimidating, violent or threatening towards their social workers. That's simply not the case. We know that many people, social workers, enjoy very positive and rewarding relationships with the service users and the clients that they work with. But what this report does do is highlight a really troubling picture, as you say, very stark in terms of the traumatic incidents that social work staff are experiencing. And whilst the number may be small, you know, it's really significant that there are, you know, 220 people heading to work, and this is the type of situation that they are facing.
Let's totally agree on that. Whether you have 20,000 staff, 50,000 staff or 300 staff, if 220 people are on their way to work this morning who have been threatened with assault, with death, with rape, with torture, it's unbelievable that people in society think they can do that. Who are these people? Obviously not asking for their names, but who are these people? What sort of people are they that treat members of staff with such disdain?
Well, I think it's fair to say, Frank, social workers, you know, we go into our job with our eyes open. We know it's a difficult, demanding and very stressful job. Hugely rewarding, as I know I've said to you before, and that's why we do it. But we are working with people oftentimes in the most difficult situations in their life. So if you imagine working with someone who is mentally unwell, who is acutely and psychotically ill, being assessed to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital against their wishes, that's a very traumatic situation, and people may act in those scenarios in ways that they wouldn't normally. We also intervene in people's lives in relation to the care of their children and are oftentimes carrying out court decisions in terms of removal of children or questioning parents around their capacity to look after their child. And that can be incredibly difficult. Now, as social workers, we do that in a really skilled way, and we're trained to deal with that. But we understand, as professionals, that we are going to be involved in really complex, difficult scenarios. And I'm not saying that we go out expecting to be threatened or intimidated, but we understand there's a risk of that. And I think what we want to do with this report is, yes, the findings are stark. We've given voice to those and voice to social workers who maybe haven't had the opportunity to share those experiences before. And one of the things, I mean, what we've done is to try and present those findings. We presented them to the Department of Health and to employers. We present them to yourself, to the media and to the public. And we've made a number of recommendations about how we can change those circumstances for social workers. And one of the most important things that we need is a public awareness campaign like this. So that's why actually being able to speak with you and to your listeners this morning is so helpful, to say this is not acceptable. It's not okay for someone to be going to work, a public servant, there to do a really important job. It's not okay for them to encounter this kind of intimidation, threat or violence.
Is there a possibility? Is there a possibility that some social workers don't go about it the right way? They're a bit like the bailiff coming to take the car you haven't paid for. That's the way they arrive to take the children. That would annoy the best of us.
I think it's unhelpful, Frank, to blame the social worker for someone who may be aggressive or intimidating. Certainly, we always try and approach situations, and we as a professional association would encourage that we approach people in a respectful way, and that we are as mindful of the role that we're there to perform as we can be. Undoubtedly, maybe at times people may not approach it as well as they would like to, but that doesn't excuse anyone from threatening to kill a social worker.
It must be very difficult to get people to be social workers when there is that risk of the threat of death, rape, torture. How do you train people to be prepared for that? Because very often they'll be arriving at a home or arriving at a meeting one-to-one with a person who could be incredibly unsavoury.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think that it would be difficult to get people into social work, Frank. It's actually not. It's one of the most oversubscribed courses in Northern Ireland. There are way more applicants per social work place for training. There are more applicants than there are places. So we haven't, to this stage, experienced any kind of recruitment difficulties. People do see it as a career that they want to get involved in. Most of us who get into social work are doing it because it's a vocation. You know, it's something that they genuinely feel passionate and committed about. They want to help people. They want to challenge social injustice, and they want to make a difference. As you say, we need robust training, and we're very fortunate in Northern Ireland to have a really rigorous and robust degree programme. 50% of our time on our training is spent actually doing the job of social work in social work offices and teams. So we're quite unique in that way. And that is about building up those skills, that knowledge, and that professional resilience. We have a really robust system in terms of support for social workers once they qualify through our assessed year in employment, which is mandatory here, and that helps people adjust from being a student and from learning to being a practitioner. And there's some protections around caseload and some increased supervision. So there are real systems in place to support staff. And ultimately what our report does is to call on employers to look and to find ways to better support staff when these incidents occur. As I say, we're not saying they happen in every single social work contact on a home visit, but where we know there's a risk, it's incumbent upon employers to make sure that they have really robust policies around lone working and around risk management, and also really important, when incidents occur, that there's a consistent approach and a compassionate approach to supporting and enabling that social worker to stay at work and to carry on doing their job.
And just finally, Carolyn, this morning as we're looking out and seeing the sunshine, what percentage of social workers are off with stress? What percentage are dreading going to their next appointment? And what percentage are merrily listening to the radio thinking, I'm in the most wonderful job in the world?
I wish I knew the answer to that, Frank. I don't actually have a statistic around that at this stage. But what our report does say is that actually the majority of staff who have encountered intimidation, threats or violence don't take time off work. We're really resilient, so we keep going. Sometimes maybe at our own cost we keep going. But as I say, I don't have a kind of a statistic for you to say this is how many social workers are off sick at the moment. That's probably a whole other discussion, Frank.
All right. Carolyn, thank you for the feedback on it. Thank you very much indeed. Carolyn Yurt, who is the Northern Ireland manager with the Northern Ireland Association of Social Workers. Are you one? Are you employed in the field? Are you out in your car at the moment? Are you dreading your next appointment? Or have you a story to tell us without naming any names of just that feel good of being able to deliver a service where you've been able to benefit from seeing the rewards of it yourself? Do tell us your story. 0289033105. Is it a job you would recommend to someone who's considering maybe a change of career? Do you regret becoming a social worker, or has it brought you great satisfaction? 0289033105. And shame on anyone who would be threatening a social worker who's arriving today to represent us all to help society. 0289033105. I want to speak to the lady on line one who has a point to make about social work. Good morning.
Is that you, Frank?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Frank, I don't want any names mentioned. Now, I had a social worker. I didn't know who she was. My husband died 10 years ago, and I had to get in touch with the hospital to find out who she was. She hadn't been near me for 10 years.
Yeah, just before you go any further, I don't want you to name her, but go ahead.
Oh, I don't want my name even mentioned. I'm not naming any names, no way. But she hadn't come near me for 10 years. And a lady out of the hospital came to see me, and she asked who my social worker was, and I couldn't tell you. And I am registered blind. So I've never given abuse to anyone at all. So there's two sides to every story. I had one time, two men came to take me to the hospital, the loveliest men ever you came, and they said, I wish we would come to a house like this all the time. For some houses we get awful abuse, and it's lovely to come to a house. I appreciate anybody that's doing anything for me. But these social workers aren't made out all but they're meant to be. They might come across some nasty people, we all do in life, but most certainly, I didn't hear from her for 10 long years.
Why did you expect to hear from her? Were you on her calling list? Were you someone that she had been assigned to?
I had a wee daughter with Down syndrome. My husband was on dialysis, and I lost my sight through macular. I'm sure you know what macular degeneration is. I lost my sight. Now, I'm partially sighted. I can see a wee bit. And I asked for a social worker to come out. And I had a lovely girl came, but unfortunately she left and the new one started. And I never seen her. I didn't need her. Thank God, I'm very independent. And I haven't seen her for 10 years until she came out to me. And she said, our words were, and I know, Frank, I haven't to mention any names. Our words were, how do you keep your house so nice? And I said, because I get a cleaner every week and a pair. She was insinuating I was able to do my own cleaning. I've had a girl coming to me for years, Frank, cleans for me and a pair every week.
But do you think, was she just on that, do you think she was insinuating that maybe you were getting some benefit that you weren't entitled to?
Oh, no, I'm not getting any benefit.
Yeah,
I'm
but what was she insinuating then? If she was saying,
You're more able than what you're making out to be. As much as I have been to the Royal and got injections in my eyes, but they weren't successful. She was making out, I think you can see, you can see my image. You know?
Yeah, but what would her advantage be? What would the advantage be to her to point out that you were more able than you were letting on? What were you standing to lose if she pointed that out?
Well, I wanted her to come out and give me a wee bit of advice and a wee bit of help.
So you felt that she was getting a point across to you that you had no call for a social worker?
Yes.
And did you feel that she was lazy over the 10 years, that she didn't turn up, or was she simply not assigned to you over those 10 years?
Frank, if anybody doesn't come to a house where there's three people not well in it, unfortunately my husband and my wee daughter has died since that, I'm on my own, there's something wrong if they don't come out and see you.
So she was assigned to you, but she didn't come to see you. And then you got a sense that when she did come, she was trying to wriggle out of having to visit you again. However, maybe she was just complimenting you on the nice home.
No. No, I was in the hospital a couple of years ago, and they asked me who my social worker was, and I told them, I couldn't tell you, didn't even know her name. And one of the girls was very helpful. I can name the hospital, can't I? Mm-hmm. It was the Ulster Hospital. And she got in touch, and she told me, she says, I know who your social worker is. And that's how I got her name. So, I mean, it's not all one-sided. People's not nasty. I've never been nasty with anybody. I'm very grateful for any help I get. Very, very grateful. And I wouldn't give anybody any abuse.
No, I doubt, I absolutely doubt if you would. A very pleasant person to speak to. I just wonder, however, are we being a bit unfair to that individual social worker who didn't turn up over the 10 years? Well, was she run off her feet doing other things? Did she feel maybe that you didn't need as much assistance as you feel you did? But then three people in the house with challenges, if anyone deserves assistance, it sounds like as if you do. That's the dilemma. I'd hate to think that the social worker was assigned to you and was just so lazy that she wouldn't turn up. That would be pretty negative. But thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very, very much. This is what leads to debate and discussion between the client and the social work staff. I think there's a lady on this line as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning.
Yes,
Frank.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Frank. Frank, I was just listening to that lady there, God bless her, and she's telling the truth. I have, the young ladies today in society, the ones that's getting, having their wee babies, they're not getting a chance because there's no accommodation for them. They're hitting the streets. There's no help for any children in that town at all, Frank. Sometimes I go in the evenings and I look at the children in the hallways, and there's no children with them. The children are all taken off them. So the grandmothers and the grandfathers are putting themselves into mental health.
Yeah, but what are you saying, that the social workers are too quick to remove children who they feel aren't being properly looked after?
Yeah. Well, for instance, there's a friend of mine, and she just had, her daughter had the baby, and she didn't have a chance at all. This girl is in the hostel in University Street, 13 years. Three of her children have been, the members of the family have took them. But our other daughter, two wee grandsons, they were taken away, and our daughter didn't get a chance at all because it didn't accommodate her. There's no places to put the young ones with their children. And when it comes to social workers, they do a police check. It takes a year and a half for the police check to come out.
Yeah, it's a reminder, I think, to some extent of the, as you say there, it's a good word, facility. It doesn't exist to the extent that it needs to here in Northern Ireland when it comes to housing and available housing for maybe a new mum or someone facing a challenge. But I'm not so sure that we'd be blaming the social workers for all of these ills.
Well, I've had experience with social workers myself now, Frank. And Frank, they didn't have no consideration whatsoever because of some of my background in life. I mean, I didn't get it easy myself, Frank.
Do you think they lack do you think they lack sympathy and understanding?
Most definitely. And some of them can't do their job right. A professional doesn't cry. Professionals had come out to me. I was fighting for some of my grandchildren, and they did not know sympathy at all. They started to cry when they heard my story when I was a young girl.
But my goodness, if you don't mind me saying, that shows a human side to your social worker. It reminds me of what we were talking about at the beginning of the programme, the stress that social workers would be under. And yes, that social worker needs to be professional in the face of challenge, but if she's listening or he's listening to a very sad story, a backstory coming from the victim, and you sound like as if you're a victim of some sort, that surely someone being tearful is hardly a reason to criticise them.
Frank, they're not getting enough training. They're not getting enough training, and it took a year and a half, Frank, a year and a half to get a police check. For my daughter was going to take one of my grandchildren, and all of a sudden the police check wasn't done. Now, I did go down at one time to the courts and told my daughter to say to the social workers to go into the courtroom that I have stamped, because me and her haven't seen eye to eye, because I had to leave a long time ago for certain reasons. And Frank, my background is catching up with my children's background. I'm not having a Frank. I don't want to intrude into
your background, but are you saying to me that you broke the law in some way?
No, I didn't break the law. I had to leave because under circumstances of things that bad things had happened to me.
Okay.
And
Yeah. So you've been a victim, and you've told the social worker your story. How did you react with the social worker when that social worker started to cry? Well, what did you do then?
With my life, what happened to my life when I told her, Frank, she couldn't get her head around it. It was so bad. Frank, I fought hard. They put me in the one bedroom flat and they kept telling me, where are you going to put your children? That was back in the early 90s. Now, all my siblings are all grown up big girls now. And they keep saying, oh, we'll get you here. I have a daughter in a hostel, 13 years, Frank, 13 years. And they still haven't given her a place. She just gave birth to a wee baby there last year. Thank God the baby's okay with her lifestyle. But I think if they give her a house, she'll be able to get her children back. The social worker was not sympathetic at all whatsoever. On Friday...
Yes, but I'm trying to get a handle on being a social worker in this situation, because I don't want to ask you to tell your story about what you've been through. So you've obviously, from what you've said, you've had children removed from your care down the years. That's basically what you're saying to me.
Yes, in the early 90s.
In the 90s. And that was a traumatic time for you.
Absolutely,
and those who were making the decisions obviously believed that they had good reason to take the children into care. And this has hurt you. This has hurt you a lot. And you feel that if you had been given some assistance, you could have looked after your own children. And I'm getting an understanding of your hurt. But whenever the social worker, the professional, came to your house and you told the story in more detail and the social worker cried with you,
yes,
how did you behave then to the social worker? What was that like in your house while the social worker was in tears?
Well, I have given up on the social workers, Frank. On Friday past, I phoned up for help.
Yeah, but just bring me back to the social worker being in the house. Did you put an arm around the social worker? Did you say, gosh, don't cry?
Yes,
or did you give off to her?
I did. I apologised to her because I hold everything in, but I needed to get everything out of me that particular day. And she cried. And 6 weeks later, a gentleman came out. He was okay. He helped me because of all them years ago, my children are in their 30s now, Frank, and they still can't believe the way I was treated. And one of my daughters, I took her on a live talkback show, and the subject was, why do siblings get split up when they're getting fostered? They couldn't answer. She's wanting answers.
It's understandable.
She can't get her head around why. I mean, these two little ones have been taken. They told me them kids are going to be staying with each other. Now I've been told that they're separated. I'm in bad health now, very bad health. Frank, I will get back to Friday again. I phoned for help. And this particular lady comes out to see me. She's always off. And I says, well, I can't handle life no more. I says, and the guy said to me on the phone, look, we can't do nothing till Monday. Frank, they told me they couldn't do nothing till Monday over the weekend, Frank. And I was asking for help. So I just said, look, I'm throwing the rope, but I can't handle it no more. Within 10 minutes, there was two strange people at my door, Frank. Two strange people, and I'm not going to tell my whole story again to two strange people. They still haven't come out to see me, Frank.
Well, the two strangers would have been two social workers who did react.
They were very young. I know they're only training.
But they did come to help. They came to help when you put out that call.
Well, Frank, I had to beg them. I have myself a few times tried to take my own life because of the system, the way they're treating my children. Frank, there's a lot of children in that town need help. The social workers are not helping them. They're not helping them, Frank. And they're laying in doorways. They're getting themselves pregnant. God knows who the fathers are. God bless them. And next thing, the babies are getting taken off them. There's no chance in life. There's never no chance here in life. Frank, it's getting worse. It's getting worse here in Northern Ireland for the young ladies and the young boys as well. It's heartbreaking to watch.
Just at a personal level, and it is heartbreaking, and it reminds us of the dilemmas facing families and the dilemmas facing social workers, the way you're describing it. Have you managed to get any counselling yourself, anything separate from social work? Have you had any counselling at all, considering you've admitted suicidal thoughts? Have you ever lifted the phone and spoken to someone who might be able to help you outside of social services?
About 12 years ago, Frank, me and my friend, she came along with me to Lagan Valley. They took me into a room, two strange fellas. I know they were only trainees. And when I was walking out with my friend, she sat outside, Frank, and they thought we were away. Them two guys sat and they laughed at me. Them two guys laughed at me, Frank.
Well, that is very sad to hear if that is what you're being put through. I'm going to recommend, just after the conversation, we'll read out a telephone number, and it would be of benefit to anyone who's been through a series of really difficult situations like yourself, and maybe you haven't, or other people haven't, lifted the phone to speak to trained counsellors, because it could help. It could help in the dilemma that you are facing. And I richly appreciate you coming on the programme, and I know people will be willing you to get into a state of happiness and family happiness as quickly as you can. We have some of these numbers handy. There's the Lifeline number, which is 0808 808 8000. That's one very useful number, 0808 808 8000. There are trained people there who certainly will speak to you. And I really appreciate you coming on. And I do hope that things become happier for your family circle. Okay.
Can I just say to you, there's a place called Wave. It's a trauma centre. And there's one wee girl in there called Michelle, and she's absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. The wee girl is absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. And she's very, very good. And she's from Wave Trauma Centre.
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt that is a perfect example. And Michelle and her team there, that would be a perfect example of who any of us could speak to when we're facing incredibly difficult times. Thank you. I really appreciate your call. Thank you very much indeed. 0289 033 105. This programme started with a discussion this morning about how difficult it is to be a social worker and what social workers have to face in the field. We've also had contributions from clients of social workers who are less than happy with the experiences that they've been through. And let me speak to Liam, who wants to make a point about the stats. Good morning, Liam.
Good morning, Frank. How are you keeping?
Very well, Liam. Go ahead.
Frank, I am a single father, and I have been raising my two children for the last 10 years on my own. But it wasn't always that plain sailing, and I had to jump through a lot of hurdles to get in the position I was prior to getting the children. My children's mother, who was heavily into drink, drugs, partying, and regularly just disappearing for like a year or two more, constantly was given all these chances to continue her habit from social services. With my concerns was raised, and they went unheard. Now they kept giving her placements and kept doing everything, basically bending over just to keep her happy. And even in court, you know, when they paint a fairly distorted narrative on certain topics, so in our lives and stuff. But for me, what I had to get my kids back, what I had to do was incredible. I had to do courses, I didn't even do anything wrong. I had to do everything. I know they had the children's safety in mind, which is, I respect that. But, you know, but I have witnessed in several occasions them blatantly lying in court about certain issues that has arose in our lives.
Yeah, well, it's a very serious accusation to say that anyone would have lied in court. We have absolutely no evidence of that. And I know we're not talking about any individual person, and we're not talking about anyone who's been named. But Liam, their description of what they believe to be the truth and your understanding of what you believe to be the truth may be two different things. That doesn't mean that someone has lied in court, because obviously lying in court is a crime. In relation to the social worker dealing with your situation, did you get a sense that the social worker was in favour of the female looking after the children as opposed to the male? Is that the main point you're making?
Yeah, that's it, Frank. You know, I think that the family courts and the social services have a biased treatment towards fathers, as if like we can't do this role as being mom and dad. And, you know, in my 10 years of being a parent, you know, I've proved them all wrong. And even now, today, you know, I still have social workers calling out, a different set of social workers, because my children's mum feels that she wants to be mum again, and then she disappeared for 3 years.
Okay, I don't want to discuss other people on the program who aren't here. But you feel that you are a dad who's doing a good job with your children. You've been doing this for 10 years. Have you a concern that you may in the near future have to share custody again with the mother of the children?
No, Frank, you know, like, I want to see what's best for the children, first and foremost. And, you know, and if that's a case of, like, okay, if mum's had a few upsets in the past, you know, knowing we've all been fragile at one point in life, and she seems legitimately got her act together and stuff like that there, and they can work for the betterment of her children, then, no, I mean, if that's all in place, absolutely certain. That's a lane that I would go down. But, you know, even when we're in court and stuff like that there, she's openly admitted she takes drugs, and the social workers are still right now at this moment planning my children's next visit with her. Given the history of this case, of my case, and the length of time and the substances, and that 10 years on there, it's still a case, and social services are still wanting this woman to be in their lives, I feel that if the tables had been turned and if it was me with all this, you know, sheet of, you know, neglectfulness, drug admission, and so on, I think the family courts and the social workers would chase me.
Okay. It's an argument that a lot of men do put forward, that the chips are stacked in favour of the female. Well done on bringing your children up over the last 10 years. By the way, you seem to love them deeply. And thank you for speaking to us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. Good morning to you. 90 333 105.